Flower brings you Grand Central Station. As a bullet seeks its target, shining rails in every part of our great country are aimed at Grand Central Station, heart of the nation's greatest city. Drawn by the magnetic force of the fantastic metropolis, day and night, great trains rush toward the Hudson River, sweep down its eastern bank for 140 miles, flash briefly by the long red row of tenement houses south of 125th Street, dive with a roar into the 2.5 mile tunnel which burrows beneath the glitter and swank of Park Avenue, and then Grand Central Station, crossroads of a million private lives, gigantic stage on which are played 1,000 dramas daily. A great poet once asked, "What is there in thee, moon, that thou shouldst move my heart so potently?" Young Johnny Clement knew the answer to that one, and knew it well, because he had learned it the hard way. As our story opens, Johnny is lying motionless in the emergency room of the police hospital not far from Grand Central Station. The nurse beside his bed is taking his pulse as she listens to his slow, tortured breathing. She looks up as the door opens.
Okay to come in now?
Yes. Good evening, Inspector. Come in.
Has he regained consciousness yet?
Yes, sir. About an hour ago.
Good. All right, if I talk to him for a little while, I promise not to tire him.
I'm all right, nurse. You don't have to worry about me.
There's your answer, Inspector. I'll leave you alone with him.
Thank you, nurse. I won't be long. Well, Clement, sure you feel like talking?
Yeah, let's get it over with. Ask your questions.
I didn't come here to grill you, Johnny.
You didn't come here to bring me flowers, neither. Fire away.
Look, son, you're pretty well banged up. Why make this any more difficult than it is?
Okay. I'll make it easy for you. Just tell me what you want me to admit, and I'll admit it. Take whatever's coming to me.
I'm not asking you to admit anything. But I would like to hear your story of what happened. The whole story. From the very beginning.
Okay. If that's what you want, I'll try and give it to you. As you already know, I'm just a small-town kid. A hick with big-city ideas. Yeah. I had a lot of big ideas. Like making $1 million, sitting in a fancy office, and stuff like that. I guess that part of it started after I met Ruth, when my father moved to River Junction to take a job in a foundry. You see, River Junction's just a dirty little hole of a town out in the country. It was always kind of a mystery to me how a place like that could produce a girl as beautiful as Ruth. I know I wasn't good enough for her. Me, Johnny Clement, the kid in greasy overalls who worked at the filling station. But I sort of forgot about that when I met Ruth. I made up my mind I was going to have her, but that I wouldn't take her unless I could give her the best, the very best of everything. You know what I mean. Ruth didn't see things quite that way. She wanted us to get married right away, and nothing I said seemed to make any difference, even that last night when I was getting ready to go to New York.
But, darling, I don't care whether you wear overalls or a stiff white collar or how much money you have in the bank. I just love you, Johnny. Doesn't that mean anything to you?
Oh, you know it does, Ruth. It means everything in the world to me. That's why my mind's made up.
No, Johnny.
Now, don't make it any harder for me, Ruth. Oh, here, give me a hand with this suitcase, will you? Now, press down on the top so I can lock it.
All right, Johnny.
Atta girl. There we are. Everything in the world that Johnny Clement owns, all neatly squeezed into one shiny new suitcase.
All except my heart, darling.
Oh, come on now, Ruth. Don't look so sad. You sound as if I'm about to fly to the moon instead of going 200 miles to the city.
I can't help it, Johnny.
Listen, baby, give me 6 months in New York, or at most a year, and I'll be sending a brand new Cadillac back to River Junction for you. Now, that's nothing to wear a long face about, is it?
Please, Johnny, stay here with me, where you belong.
Oh, Ruth. Darling, maybe we never should have started this. You and I mean. Maybe we're just wrong for each other.
Don't say that, Johnny. I won't let you.
Maybe you should have married Harley when he asked you. With his job in the bank at Albany and that big house.
But I love you, Johnny.
Ruth, that's why I've got to make good in New York. Now just give me a few months there. Maybe a year and I'll be able to buy and sell guys like Harley wholesaling gross lots.
You frighten me when you talk like that.
Ruth. Well, it's getting near time for the train. Come on, baby. Walk a little way toward the station with me.
Johnny.
Hmm?
Johnny, look at the moon.
Yeah. Full one. Pretty, isn't it?
That's our moon, Johnny. Remember the night we met?
How could I ever forget it? There was a full moon that night, too. Just like this one.
And that night when you first told me you loved me, there was the gentle moon, the lamp of lovers, lighting all your words.
You should have been a poet, Ruth, talking about a moon that way.
Please, Johnny, don't make fun of it. If it could talk, I know what it would say.
Oh, Ruth.
It'd say, don't go, Johnny. Stay here with the girl who loves you, the girl who needs you.
I wish you wouldn't talk like that, Ruth. It doesn't make my going away any easier.
Johnny, promise me something.
Sure, baby. Anything. You just name it.
Promise me, Johnny, that you'll... Well, that you'll remember our moon. And that every month when it's full, you'll go out somewhere by yourself and think of all the times we've looked at it together.
That's so silly, honey. Oh, I'd feel like a moonstruck kid just going out to stare up
Please,
at the sky.
Johnny, I'm serious. And when you're looking at the moon, I'll be doing it, too. And thinking about us, and... Well, it'll make us seem closer together.
All right, Ruth.
You promise?
Sure, darling. That isn't much of a promise for a guy who loves you as much as I do.
In a few seconds, we'll return to our Grand Central Station drama, sponsored by Pillsbury, greatest name in flour. Ladies, by this time, you've heard the good news. Happy baking days will soon be here. Yes, the government is removing most milling restrictions. The wheat emergency will soon be over. Now, that means Pillsbury will again be milling your favorite flour, Pillsbury's best. And here's even more good news. Pillsbury's Snow Sheen Cake Flour is coming back also for those special occasion party cakes. Of course, it'll be several weeks before Pillsbury's Best reaches your grocer. A switchover like this can't be made overnight. In the meantime, remember that you get the very finest baking possible today when you use Pillsbury Enriched Flour. That fine all-purpose flour is ready and waiting for you at your grocer's right now. As much of it as you want. It gives you the kind of baking that makes a youngster say,
"No one can make cookies like my mom."
Or when you fixed a really good meat pie.
Can I please have some more of the crust this time?
Ladies, that's what keeps on happening when you bake with Pillsbury flour. And it's far from a secret, that baking success with Pillsbury flour. More and more good cooks today are switching to this carefully milled all-purpose flour. There have been times when your grocer couldn't always fill your order for as much Pillsbury flour as you asked him for. Pillsbury just couldn't seem to keep up with the demand. Listen, here again is evidence of the demand for baking with Pillsbury flour.
Gee, Mom, can't you make some more of those swell biscuits?
Yes, you no longer have to keep your family waiting for real baked treats fresh from your oven. Pillsbury is catching up. Yes, we believe we have caught up with the big swing, the Pillsbury flour. Ask your grocer. He'll tell you that more and more of his customers are switching to the flour in the bag with the familiar red, white, and blue Pillsbury colors. Why not try Pillsbury flour yourself for your very next baking? Now back to our Grand Central Station drama.
For the first couple of months after I landed in New York, I remembered that promise to Ruth. And boy, was I a sucker for any song about the moon. Moonlight and roses on a hurdy-gurdy. Shine shine on, Harvest Moon, coming from a tinny player piano in one of those Broadway shooting galleries. Oh, the moonlight fair the night along the Wabash over the radio. Yep. Didn't matter what the words said. To me, they meant only one thing. Ruth. But when I looked up at the sky for that gentle moon, that lamp of lovers that she used to talk about, well, all I could see was lots of tall buildings stretching up in a glow of bright lights that misted up the whole night sky. No moon, no stars, almost no sky. So, little by little, the promise slipped farther and farther into the back of my mind, while I walked the soles right off my shoes looking for a big-paying job. The one I finally got was driving a truck along the docks for $32.50 a week. It wasn't long after that I met Tony Marudi. I was standing by my truck waiting for it to be loaded when he came up to me. He had on a gray suit, gray hat, gray suede shoes. Everything matched. He even wore a sneer on his mouth to match his small, sharp face.
Hello, Johnny. You are Johnny Clement, aren't you?
That's right. How'd you know?
It's part of my business to know the names of men we're, shall we say, interested in.
I don't know why anybody in New York should be interested in me. Who are you?
Marudi's my name. Tony Marudi.
Yeah? What's on your mind, Mr. Marudi?
Oh, nothing in particular. I just wanted to talk to you. Like your job, Johnny?
What do you think?
I'd venture a guess and say you didn't. Not enough money.
Listen, mister, I don't know your racket, but
I was only thinking that you might welcome an opportunity to supplement your income. After all, Johnny, you're not really a truck driver. You're a man who should be making real money.
And what do you suggest I do about it?
Well, now, this is no place to talk business, since what I want to say is in strictest confidence.
You're right ahead. There's no one around here listening, do you? Except me.
All right. Here's my proposition. Occasionally, a ship is unloaded here carrying cargo that my organization requires in its business.
Such as what, for instance?
Well, such as certain fabrics shipped over from England.
Thinking of replenishing your stock of gray tweed suits?
I see what you mean. Pretty good.
And now I see what you mean. And it's not so good. The answer, Mr. Marudi, is no.
But, Johnny...
You heard me. I may need money, but not that kind.
You don't understand. Your job be very simple. All you have to do is drive your truck out of the city to a place where we can meet you.
I said I'm not interested.
Not even for a cut of, say, $2,000?
Not even for 10 times that much. Now get out of here before someone has to carry you.
I thought you were a lot smarter than that, Johnny.
All right. So do you. I'm dumb. Now get going.
All right, Johnny. Don't get sore. Here's a card with an address where you can reach me. You know, just in case...
Weeks went by. Long, hard weeks. Then months. And I was getting no closer to realizing those fancy dreams I'd spouted to Ruth before I left River Junction. After a while, I got so discouraged that it hurt me even to write to her. So I wrote less and less frequently until finally I wasn't writing to her at all. Then one day, a letter came. Ruth's writing was on the envelope, but it wasn't her stationery. And when I opened it, I saw it wasn't even a letter. Mr. and Mrs. Roger Adams request the honor of your presence at the marriage of their daughter Ruth to Mr. Harley Higgins. Marriage of their daughter Ruth? Marriage of their daughter Ruth? Marriage! Ruth!
Come in. Well, Mr. Johnny Clement, isn't it?
Yeah, it's me, Mr. Marudi.
Sit down. Cigarette?
No, thanks. Well, I guess you know why I'm here.
You've changed your mind.
Yeah, I've changed my mind. I'm ready for that job now.
Good, Johnny. Good. Tell me, what made you change...
That's none of your business, Marudi. I've decided to work for you. That's all you need to know.
I'm sorry, Johnny. Let's forget I ever asked you, okay?
Okay. And I'll do that dock job for the $2,000 you promised me. And any other jobs you got.
I don't care whether it's honest or not, or dangerous. If there's money in it, I'll do it, see? Anything, any time. You're looking at a new and different Johnny Clement.
You know, Johnny, I had a hunch you'd be coming up to see me one of these days. Here, let's drink to the new Johnny Clement.
Thanks, just the same, but I don't drink. And never mind your hunches. Just tell me what I have to do.
Sure, Johnny. Here's the setup. A week from tonight, a ship will tie up at your dock.
Yeah?
Part of the cargo will be woolen goods from Scotland and England. High-grade stuff worth plenty bucks a yard. Especially now with a clothing shortage.
Go on.
Those big export crates will be jammed to the lid with bolts and bolts of the stuff. We want to get them, and with your help, we can.
How?
Well, you've been hauling in and out of the pier for months, so nobody will suspect you of anything. Besides which, have papers to prove you're the driver for the forwarding company.
Okay, okay, then what?
After the custom guard okays your load, drive out the gate as usual. Then turn left and follow the river for four blocks. On the corner by the Esso gas station, a guy in a brown suit will give you the thumb business, you know, like a hitchhiker. You pick him up.
Hey, I thought I was going to handle this job by myself.
Well, now, it's not that we don't trust you, Johnny. We just hate to have you get lost or take a wrong turn.
Okay, okay, so I pick up the hitchhiker. And what?
Then you drive north on Broadway out of town. Along a route I'll plot on a map for you. About 22 miles out, there's a dirt road leading off to the right. We'll be parked on North Broadway in a black Chrysler sedan just before you get to the road, so you'll know where to turn. As soon as you swing off Broadway, about a couple of hundred feet, switch your lights off, and we'll pull in after you.
To relieve me of the load?
You're catching on fast, John.
And a payoff. When do I get that?
As soon as you deliver the goods. Oh, don't worry, my friend. You'll get everything that's coming to you.
Ladies, when you do all your baking with Pillsbury flour, you are sure before you start, sure of delicious, flavorful baking. Take your cakes, for example, and that's a pretty good test of an all-purpose flour. What kind of cake does it bake?
Well, I can tell you about that, all right. I guess I'm what you might call extra fussy about cakes. So is my family. And the cakes I bake with Pillsbury flour are exactly what I want them to be.
May I ask what you expect of a good cake? Why would you call it good?
Why, any good cook could answer that without even stopping to think. You can tell as soon as you take your cake from the oven whether it's as high as it should be. And texture is important, very important. Some women call it the crumb of the cake.
And you certainly do get a beautiful, even texture in the cakes you bake with Pillsbury flour, a higher cake.
With a delicious flavor. Honestly, it's a pleasure to frost a cake made with Pillsbury flour.
And you can take the word of Ann Pillsbury, ladies. Everything you bake will be a treat when you bake it with Pillsbury flour. Take pies. That golden brown crust that melts in your mouth is a credit to your favorite filling. Take biscuits.
Tender and creamy and flaky. I just can't seem to bake enough biscuits for that family of mine.
Cookies, too. The cookies you bake with Pillsbury flour, well, you'll almost have to put a padlock on that cookie jar.
And here's another thing about Pillsbury flour. Now, I've always liked to use my own recipes for just about everything I bake. But some of Ann Pillsbury's recipes, the ones I find in every bag of Pillsbury flour, you just can't have any better baking luck than I've had with those special recipes.
Use Ann Pillsbury's recipes. Use your own, your mother's, your daughter's, your neighbor's. With any of them, use Pillsbury flour and you'll notice a difference in your baking. And now, back to our Grand Central Station drama sponsored by Pillsbury, greatest name in flour.
Finally, Friday night came, dark and rainy. They loaded my truck with a lot of heavy cases plastered with custom seals, and I drove away from the pier. Four blocks up at the gas station, I picked up Marudi's stooge and headed the truck out of the city. All that time, Red, that was the stooge's name. Red kept up a string of senseless chatter.
What a cinch this job is. Like taking bananas from a monkey. What, 5 years from now, them boneheads will still be wondering what happened to all that moth food.
Moth food?
Yeah, you know, wool, moth food, you get it? Ah, well. Anyway, I can use this, though. Think maybe I'll take me one of them airplane trips to Paris or somewhere. Hey, what are you going to do with your split? Boy, that's some thunder.
Hey, didn't you hear what I asked you?
Huh?
What's the matter with you, bud? You ain't even listening.
I'm getting paid to drive a truck. I chatter about a lot of things that don't matter to either of us.
Okay, okay, Mac. Don't get sore about it just because you're new to the racket.
My name isn't Mac. Johnny.
Okay, Johnny. Like you guess from my hair, everybody calls me Red. Now, let me tell you this for your own good. When you've been in the rackets as long as I have, you learn it pays to be a little more friendly with the guys you work with.
Now, you've told me for my own good, shut up.
Yeah. Certain people I know are sure getting touchy around here.
I said shut up! When you're riding with me, you do as I tell you, understand?
Yeah, looks like the thunder shower's blowing over. It's beginning to clear up towards the east there.
Yeah?
Yeah, gonna be a nice night after all. Hey, look.
At what?
The sky, stupid. The moon, you see it?
Yeah. Yeah, I see it.
A full moon. Gee, sure is pretty.
The sight of that moon hanging in the sky was as big a shock to me as if I'd suddenly seen Ruth sitting on the seat beside me. I couldn't seem to get my eyes off it. It was the first time I'd really seen the moon since the night Ruth and I said goodbye. I started remembering lots of things. But most of all, I remembered what she said the night I left. That every time I looked at the moon, she'd be looking at it too and thinking of me. Suddenly, I wasn't two people any longer. I was only Johnny Clement, the kid from River Junction who was in love with a girl named Ruth.
Hey, what's the matter with you, Johnny?
What? Oh, nothing, Red.
You've been looking at that moon like you was hypnotized or something.
Hypnotized? Maybe I am.
Well, just don't forget you're still behind the steering wheel. I ain't in no mood to dig myself out of a ditch tonight.
I'm all right. Hey, Red. Have you ever thought much about the moon?
Not much about the moon? I don't get you. Say, that car with Marudi and a boy should be along here someplace. You better slow down a little.
Have you ever seen a moon like that, Red? It's so big and so sort of perfect.
Well, you got a screw loose in your upper story. First you won't talk at all,
it's
and
a gentle moon. The lamp of lovers.
Hey, look, will you keep your eyes on the road and slow down like I told you?
Our moon, she used to call it. Remember our moon, Johnny.
It's the screwiest talk I ever heard.
I used to make fun of her and tell her she should have been a poet.
Hey, there's the car up there on the right, Johnny.
Now I know what she was talking about.
Hey, Johnny!
And it's still our moon. It'll always be our moon.
Slow down, Johnny. Look where you're going.
As long as that moon is up there shining down like that.
You crazy fool! Watch out! You're running out the road!
Red was right. I was hypnotized. I couldn't see anything but that moon. I couldn't hear anything but Ruth's voice. I didn't aim my truck at the black Chrysler sedan. I just hit it, that's all. Well, I guess this all sounds kind of crazy to you. But somehow, I feel that that's what the moon was trying to do. It was trying to blind me to everything. So that I'd run off the road into Maruti's car. Yeah, I sure was moonblind. Well, that's the story, Inspector. Probably doesn't make much sense to you.
On the contrary, Johnny, it makes a lot of sense.
I guess it doesn't make much difference anyway. I'm ready to take whatever's coming to me.
I don't think you'll have too much to worry about. When you hit that car and pinned it in the ditch with your truck, we were able to make a clean haul of some men we've been trying to get our hands on for a long time.
Yeah, and me too. I was part of that gang.
I don't think you really were, Johnny, but it'll be up to the judge to decide about that. Right now, the charge against you is reckless driving. Now, if you'll excuse me for a moment, Johnny, I want to step out in the hall and check up on something.
Johnny.
Ruth. What are you doing here?
Oh, Johnny, darling. Johnny.
But, Ruth, I don't understand.
Everything's all right now.
What do you mean, everything's all right?
I mean, I'm never going to leave you again, Johnny. Not if you still want me. You do, don't you?
Oh, Ruth. Of course I do. You're engaged. You're going to marry Harley.
No, Johnny. It's you I'm going to marry.
I'm all mixed up. What about that other wedding?
Called off, Johnny.
Called off?
What happened?
Well, it was last night. There was a full moon.
Yes. Yes, I know.
I was waiting for Harley to come for me, and while I was waiting, I went outside to look at the moon.
Yes, Ruth.
And I had the strangest feeling, Johnny. I can't explain it, but for the first time since you left, I thought you were looking at the moon, too.
You must have known, darling.
And I started to walk, slowly, like we used to, thinking it was the gentle moon, the lamp of lovers. And, well, I guess I forgot how late it was getting.
It was as if you were hypnotized?
Yes, that's it. And when I finally remembered to go back to the house, Harley'd been waiting for over an hour.
Did you tell him what had happened?
Yes, but he wouldn't listen to me. He was furious. Said he couldn't understand how anyone could spend so much time just staring at the moon. And then, oh, we said lots of things to each other, and so here I am, darling.
And you really broke your engagement to Harley?
Mm-hmm. We both decided we'd made a mistake and that it was a good thing it wasn't too late to fix it. Here, let me move your bed over to the window.
Ruth. Ruth, what are you doing? What's this all about?
There. Now look out. What do you see?
Ruth, darling. It's the moon. Our moon.
Yes, darling. The gentle moon. The lamp of lovers.
Heartwarming performance. And I know that you're all anxious to learn the names of the Broadway stars presented by Pillsbury in today's Grand Central Station drama. And I'll tell you in just a moment. But first, ladies, why not be doubly sure of something extra good in baking? Why not use Ann Pillsbury recipes right along with Pillsbury flour? These recipes, which you find in every bag, have been developed especially to bring out all the goodness and flavor in this specially milled Pillsbury flour. The bread and rolls you bake will be light and beautifully textured. Your biscuits will be flaky. Your cakes and pies delicious. Your all-around baking with Pillsbury flour will be the very best that's possible today. So be sure of good baking before you bake. Ask for Pillsbury flour. And now our cast. Today's Grand Central Station drama, Moonblind, was written by Harry Trelevan, Jr. and starred Catherine Bard as Ruth and Donald Buca as Johnny. Red was played by George Matthews, Maruti by James Monks, the nurse by Eugenia Rawls, the inspector by Frank Tweddle, and your narrator was John Reed King. We leave Pillsbury's Grand Central Station until next week at this same time. Listen for the train whistle and hear another complete and original radio drama with a great Broadway cast, starring Alice Frost, who is the better half of radio's Mr. and Mrs. North, and Gary Merrill, now on Broadway in Garson Kanin's smash hit, Born Yesterday. This is Stuart Metz, saying goodbye from Grand Central Station until next week for Pillsbury, greatest name in flour. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.